Welcome back, DGS and KMOX 205. At bottom of the hour, we have our buddy Chef Liz from Tenacious Eats coming in, bringing us some treats. We have Steve Ellman and Ian Mackey for the Think Tank today at 4 p.m. So don't ask me to explain this in great detail, but I read a story yesterday, and I actually read the story, but I didn't understand the how come of it. But for every IQ point that a teenager has, they increase their chance of medium to heavy drinking throughout life by 1.6%. So the smarter you are as a teen, the better the chance. It was careful to say not binge drinking, but becoming a moderate to heavy drinker. You have a much better chance of becoming that if you have a high IQ as a teenager, which I think your IQ stays consistent. But if, you know, like as a teen, you're a smart kid, whether you make great grades, you're just one of the smart kids who don't make great grades. It can lead into a life of alcohol.
By what percentage?
Every IQ point equals 1.6% hike.
It's interesting. I wonder how like depression plays into that, because you always hear about the link between
the smarter you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Not saying like if you're depressed, you must be. I'm not saying like if you're a heavy drinker,
no,
you must be the
thing,
smartest
though.
Person. But yeah, there are studies that show you just have maybe you're thinking about things that other people aren't thinking of. So I wonder if that how much that plays into these IQ points.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they should test ADHD. The more I learn about that, the more I think that's one of the alphabet soup that I have, because like we talked about the other day, that brushing your teeth isn't one thing, it's 10 things. And so something like getting your license plate renewed is a million things, and it's just debilitating. And but you think about it, and you procrastinate, and you think about it all the time, and it's misery-inducing. And I would think that, especially as a teen, could lead to drinking, trying to numb out all those thoughts in your head.
Huh. I'm just fascinated by this whole thing because the way it's phrased is interesting, that it showed an increase in the likelihood that respondents reported moderate to heavy alcohol use. So is it more they're more willing to
talk about it,
to accept it, to say, yeah, I drink too much or whatever. There's such a layered thing to it.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't be sad that you have a smart kid, but maybe you have to watch a little closer and be a little more proactive. It's tough.
But IQ is not also something that people very much measure.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to have a great IQ to get good grades.
No.
And you can have a great IQ and not get good grades. Right? Yeah. Like, it's not a predictor. So,
yeah.
Fascinating.
Now, having my daughter is literally on the road right now. Be safe. Heading back to KU from fall break. And it was so easy with Nick, because I think boys in general are easier for dads. I don't know how they are for the moms. But daughters are just more difficult, in my humble opinion. And teenagers today, like, we cause trouble and shenanigans, but I'm sure it's my age. I'm sure it's because now I'm in the position of father as opposed to the teenager. But there's just so many pitfalls, so many things to look out for, so many things to worry about. And the drinking just seems to be so much worse. Maybe because I didn't do it. So maybe I just wasn't in that life.
Oh, it was a big part of everything when I was in college.
Yeah.
Like I still don't drink. I didn't drink at all in high school or college, but it was everywhere.
Did you every take place crap I for went. It?
Occasionally playfully, but I didn't care.
Of course.
Yeah, I'd wait for them to get drunk and play a prank on. My buddies gave me crap, you're getting crap back.
Oh boy.
We just did a different form.
Hey, you're getting crap back, all right?
Yeah.
I was just wondering the other day, if drinking is less prevalent now among
because
teenagers. Well, that and just it just seems like study after study shows that younger people, I mean, there's a reason why bars aren't doing as well as they used to do 10, 15 years ago. Younger people just tend to drink less. I don't know why. They don't drive as early.
The reportage from Phoebe Glover is it's really extensive.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Just wondering.
I'm not a prude. I have no problem with drinking. I don't do it much anymore. But the binge drinking is just not good for anybody.
No. But I mean, it's been going on forever.
But especially when you're still basically a kid.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I had a high school friend who had to be rushed to the hospital. He was alcohol poisoning.
The good thing is they do seem to have adopted the Uber And that seems to be good.
Hope so.
That they, Phoebe says, like, look, nobody drinks and drive. Certainly on campus.
I say it's a little easier on college campuses because a lot of times they'll have, like, you know, when my daughter went to Alabama and they have a cab service you can call no charge. Yep, it's just part of your tuition. And there's shuttle buses and there's, you know, I think they even could do Ubers same way.
Yeah. Razor's Edge.
Yes. Okay. So let's start Razor's Edge by this like funny audio that I found earlier today. So I thought Wheels would appreciate this, especially. This is a French. Oh, she looks like she's maybe like 21 years old. And she's doing this activity on TikTok where it's like a language game where they show you an English word and you have to pronounce it properly. And once the program picks up on you pronouncing it properly, you can move on to the next word.
Nice. So, have you guys seen this? There's one like this too for singing, apparently.
No.
I've seen a bunch of pro athletes where you're trying to hit a note and it's like a video game. If you hit the note, it'll move the little ball through the hole and then take you to the next note that you have to try to hit.
Do-re-mi-fa-so-la-di-do.
I saw somebody doing it with their cat, like trying to get their cat's meows to match.
Yeah, those games are cool.
Well, let's listen in. This girl is adorable.
Burger.
Bogu.
Burger.
Bogu.
Burger.
Bogu.
Burger.
Bogu.
Burger.
Je me dis bien.
Burger. 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 Burger.
Bogu. Bogu.
Burger.
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 Nickel, nickel. Hot dog. Je triche à peine en plus, donc c'est vraiment génial. Nutella.
Nutella.
Les gars, les gars, les gars, c'est le dernier. Oh, les gars. Ok, on se concentre. Oreo. Oreo.
Oreo.
Oreo. Oreo. Oreo. I win, I win.
I could listen to her say burger all day.
I know, very, very cute. And she's getting so frustrated that she can't move on.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Language is so interesting and just, you know, my goal is to one day be able to speak some Japanese, like be able to string together sentences and not embarrass myself. But the pronunciation is so difficult. They use a completely three different alphabets than the alphabet we, and then you tend to think of things in like a different order because of the way their language is set up.
Right.
And then you think about like, okay, the French, they're using the same alphabet, but their pronunciation is so different that it's like a word like burger for us is nothing. It's just so challenging.
And I wonder being global now, if in 1,000 years we will have the same accent.
I don't know. That right there, those are the illustrations why it takes years to learn how to speak a language, not just understand it or read it or say a few words, because getting the little things, like you say the letter U in English, U, is pronounced like saying the word E, but put your lips together real small and say E. That's a U in French.
I wonder what the American accent is in different languages, because like a Hispanic person who speaks Spanish as a first language, English as second, or a person from India, they tend to have the same sounding accent that you can do an impression of. I wonder what we sound like speaking French.
Oh, exactly, or Spanish. The same as what it sounds like to us when they speak English.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to get made fun of by my teammates if I would try to say something in Spanish. They would laugh at how bad it was. But then they couldn't say a couple of guys that were, one guy was from Puerto Rico, another guy was a Cuban descent, but from Miami. They couldn't say the W. My name was Gwheeler. Gwheeler! And I would be like, what's that? And they're like, oh, that's just how we say it. And then I would try to say something in Spanish and it would sound silly and they would make fun of me for it.
Okay, next thing I wanted to talk about on Razor's Edge today, I saw this very interesting thread on the St. Louis subreddit. The title is, "What's Wrong with People Here?" I've lived in STL for almost 9 years now, and I can't figure it out. From the insane drivers to nightly violent crime sprees, it just seems like there are a lot of psychopaths here. Is it the lead in the water? Is it radiation poisoning? It can't be the lack of police, because I've lived in towns that had no cops at all, and people still behaved somewhat normally. Set from my iPhone while driving my Charger 107 miles per hour down the center turn lane and firing my guns in the air.
Well said.
And then the replies are just pretty great, but people start, because I mean, this is obviously kind of a tongue-in-cheek post, someone replied and said, a lot of this is post-COVID. I've noticed greatly decreased driving skills, speeding, red light running, and stop sign ignoring everywhere. Louisville, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Pittsburgh. I could keep going. Sure, St. Louis is bad, but I can say we're not as horrible as you think.
I mean, look, I think a lot of us noticed more of those things after not driving for 6 months.
That's a great point.
I think it's a combination. Like, I do think there have been people who have just said basically the hell with everybody else coming out of the lockdown.
And the people who did drive, right, like us, we went to work every day.
You were used to nothing.
We were used to using stop lights as stop signs.
Yeah. Well, right, because nobody was driving.
No,
right,
one
you
was
were
out there.
You were used to like one third of the traffic that you would normally be used to. I can tell you this. Driving in Atlanta is so much worse than St. Louis. Atlanta is insanity. Every highway, every side street, it is insanity. And my time living in Miami was insanity. You would have 90-year-old people driving in the left lane 40 and a guy in his Ferrari going 120 in the right lane. It was nonstop crazy. Like, this is not good. 70 is as close as we're going to get. Spend a week in Atlanta. In fact, the other day, Carol Daniel was in Atlanta. She texted me from Atlanta because she was listening to us on KMOX from Atlanta over the air. So she was picking up there. But I asked her about it.
Oh,
she's like,
cool.
The traffic's insane. That was her first response. I'm like, yep, it's way worse there than here. Way worse.
It's good to know.
Someone else replied, I just love this comment, said, I've lived here my whole life, and I think St. Louis has a way of weeding out the faint of heart. It's not for everyone, and I'm okay with that.
You know, there's something to be said for that. I've never thought of myself as a tough guy, but being downtown since 1990, it has an effect.
Yeah. Turning me on, turning me off,
making me feel. So I really try not to talk about Donald Trump on the show. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it's a concerted effort, and most days we don't mention his name. But... And I have this sense of depressive, nothing matters, because it seems like there's just so many people that don't see through him and people who I know and respect, and it just drives me crazy. But every now and then, you have to at least ask for some semblance of human fairness. And last night was one of those nights. I don't know if you've seen this story, but he was doing a town hall and it wasn't going well for him. A couple of people had medical emergencies which seemed to annoy him. And then he was answering questions and he was just doing it badly. He just was. One guy asked about what can you do to help small business, and he meandered, weave as he calls it. And by the end of it, he was talking about don't buy a hydrogen car because if it blows up, your wife won't even be able to recognize the body. That was chill. And then he said, nobody wants to hear question and answers. Let's play music. And so for 39 full minutes, which I dare you to watch all of it, I couldn't, that he just called out songs like Ave Maria and YMCA and then did his little dirty dance to it while Kristi Noem, who now looks like a complete fool, was standing up there being the hype guy going like, come on, everybody, let's dance. It was one of the most cringy things I've ever heard. Do we have some of that sound?
Yeah. Which one of these do you think it is, Andrew?
Yeah, it's the music one. Okay. This is just, I didn't get any of the music because it's just literally just him silently listening to music. But this is a little bit of the lead up into that.
Let's not do any more questions. Let's just listen to music. Let's make it into our music. Who the hell wants to hear questions, right?
Voters.
Isn't that beautiful, though? It's so beautiful. And we played that in Butler, Pennsylvania. We had a moment of silence, and then we had the bells of Notre Dame go off, and then we had a great opera singer, Christopher, who was so incredible, and a great, great opera singer. That's Pavarotti. Pavarotti, I guess, is... I actually asked Christopher, I said, your voice is incredible. How does it compare to Pavarotti? No, 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 sir. He was the maestro. He was the greatest of them all.
And then there's just 39 minutes.
I just want people to be fair. Just if Kamala Harris, and the reason that you can't imagine it is because she never would, and neither would any ex-president or hopefully future president. There's no chance in hell that she would do that. But if she did, if she were doing a town hall and she answered a bad question, then she goes, you know what, let's just vibe to music for 39 minutes. The right would eviscerate her.
I mean, look at how we, and again, I think justifiably treated Joe Biden when he had his things.
100%. 100%.
I mean, that doesn't seem like an okay person to me. I'm here at an event that these people specifically came to hear you talk. That's what they didn't come to look at you. They came to hear you speak. because you have an effect on them in some way, right? You make them feel good. You're making them feel like there's hope, whatever it is. The people that come to see him want to hear him talk.
And I will be fair. Let me go first in being fair. I will admit that I am a conservative person in that I am an institutionalist. I like statesmen. I like boring. I liked Paul Ryan. I like Roy Blunt. I like Mitt Romney. I even like Newt Gingrich. I like boring statesmen who talk and argue about policy. I don't like shenanigans. I don't like the clown show. And so if what you want is the clown show and you love how weird he is, okay. At least that would make some sense to me if you would just say it. I love the weirdness. I love that he just jams to YMCA instead of talking about being president. At least that would make some sense to me, but I'm just not that guy.
I mean, imagine your favorite cardinal of all time. I'm not going to name any names because I don't want to attach anybody to it, you know, unfairly, right? But your favorite cardinal of all time is going to go do a speaking engagement, and they do that. I don't want to take any more questions. Let's just have some songs, and I'm going to stand here. You would be like, what a jerk. I came here to hear your stories. I came here to hear you talk. And you just played songs for 40 minutes. Would you be okay? I mean, like, nobody would. And this is, it's almost, Dave, would you agree, the kind of the reverse example of a musician. You go to see a show and they start talking politics or they preach. And everybody's like, we're here to hear you sing.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday to you. Chef Liz, who's been a friend of the show for a while now, is with us in studio. I'll always love Liz because I was talking about missing my mom's cherry pie on the show, and she made me one. It was tremendous. And it's the last cherry pie I've had. So just fantastic. And she's doing Gremlins. Tenacious Eats presents Gremlins November 15th and 16th at Work and Leisure, which is off of Locust Street in Midtown. It is movie themed, of course, trivia prizes, specialty cocktails. 16th is sold out. 15th is getting really close. So if you want to buy tickets, you can do so at brownpapertickets.com. Good to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Everything's good.
Yeah. It makes you feel so good when someone says, I loved what you made.
I bet.
Thank you so much for saying that.
I bet. I totally get it. When I meet people out, typically they're just like, hey, man, love the show. But every now and then someone will grab me by the shoulders and talk about, I went through a really hard time and your humor got me through, and it just kills you. And that's how that pie was for me.
I was trying to send that vibe to you.
You did.
Humor and a pie and love and everything.
You sent it all. So walk us through, of course, the event with Gremlins, but then what we have here.
Oh, yeah. So I brought some really fun courses from the movie from Gremlins. As everybody knows, one of our mainstay amazing restaurants just closed, the Scottish Arms. Allie, I love you. Love you so much. I was the chef there. Gosh, 12 years ago, the executive chef, and I made tons of Scotch eggs. So
you
I
got
thought,
good at it.
Yeah, I thought it would be so much fun to do a course for Gremlins that was a Scotch egg because the outside is panko crusted. So I think a lot of people use breadcrumb, but I think the panko gives it a little bit of a better texture. And then I served that with a green marmalade and mustard kind of sauce to go with that, and then. This is a course that I really like, the miso maple drummies. Remember when the gremlins are eating those chicken legs and it's late at night and you can see their saliva and it's stretching, you know, and they're just, I don't know, something so grotesque about their little teeth hitting the bones. And so I'm like, that has to be a course. So the wings are miso maple with chili crisp and then they're flash fried and they have a double panko dip. So I thought that'd be really fun, you know, because we have Mr. Wing in the beginning of the film. It's been a while for me, so I had to rewatch it. Mm-hmm. 84. I know I saw it in the movie theater. I just can't remember which theater I was in.
Is that 40 years ago?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
To the year.
That hurts. I'm having my first Scottish egg, in spite of being Scottish, like I was telling Liz. My family didn't embrace that. I don't think we even knew. We were just, you know, mutts, mongrels. It's It's so much better than I thought. I thought it would be a bit like a Chinese egg, where it's like, you know, it's gross, but the Scots love it. It's like haggis. I didn't realize it would just be...
amazingness?
Amazingness, yeah.
I think a lot of people think that Eastern European food in general is like, you know, food that was, you know, eaten on a bet, mm-hmm. you know, like I dare you to eat this. Mm-hmm. But it's really, it's soul food. This is Scottish soul food. But that's, you pointed out exactly, like the egg, you know, when the eggs start to rupture and gremlins and they're green and they're oozing and the poor mom goes upstairs to Billy's room. And I don't know about you, but I'd be calling 911, you know, calling Rottler or somebody, yeah. Blue Chip, to come clean up these rupturing eggs. So I thought, you know, little green Scotch eggs would be so much fun.
I know that. I get it. I watch this Saturday show on CBS, and they have a section called The Dish, and they feature a restaurateur, and then they eat the food, and it pisses me off every week because I'm not eating the food. And so I get it. When we do this, you're like, well, I'm not eating that damn Scotch egg. It's really, really good. How many people can you take on the 15th? How many...
Right now, we have about 43 seats left.
Okay. I bet we can sell those.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want it to get so big that we can't interact with the audience and have fun.
Yeah.
We've done huge shows. We've done shows for 350 people. And I really missed the ability to really interact with everybody and have fun myself.
Yeah.
Because we cook in the theater around our guests.
Cool.
And we're plating right there. We've got headlamps on in the dark. So we really want, I want to enjoy it too. You know, if I'm back in the kitchen, I miss out on that gratifying experience of watching people eat.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm sending them a message
mm-hmm.
through the plate. This is, you know, this is how much I love you guys. Thank you so much for coming to watch this movie with us and enjoy the food and try and experience a movie on a visceral level.
Tell us about the voodoo guys. We're going to post a picture of those.
Yes.
I think those
posting
are the coolest. People will rip that off like crazy.
This is just because I'm not a cutesy wootsy kind of person. I love Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. That's a very Irish holiday, not mm-hmm. Scottish. Mm-hmm. But Scots, I think,
we're
took
a little spooky.
On, yeah, a little spooky too. But I made some little ham pies. And inside is a cherry and pomegranate jam I made. And I kind of poked them with the little sticks, just
I
like, you know.
Kids would love that.
This kid's going to.
Poking your brother's voodoo right in the eye.
Here's you, Sean.
This is you.
Not that I would do that to my brother.
So we've known each other a long time, but I don't know your story. Like, go back to the beginning. How did you get into being a chef at all?
You know, I grew up around food. My dad's family owned Huebner's Bakery in South St. Louis in Lima.
Cool.
On Fannie Avenue in Lima Ferry. And so I grew up around, everybody knew how to bake. Everybody knew how to decorate things. We celebrated with food. We were sad with food. Everything was love via coffee cake. German family, immigrant family. So everything was about food. And then when I got older, I started picking up cooking jobs. And it was always a way, you know, to have extra money, to pay the rent. When I lived in Chicago, I have a degree in film direction from Columbia.
Wow.
So I kind of am using my education.
You really are.
Yeah, a little bit. But I kept cooking. That's how I paid my bills. And for some reason, I thought I needed to grow up and I needed to get an office job. I did that. I worked for an amazing company, but I was really not happy. Not at all. So I did a 180, went back to culinary school. I picked up one of my first official professional jobs outside of working in all these different restaurants as a kid. Worked at Racquet Club Ledoux mm-hmm. under Chef Dozens. Then I worked at the Chase Park Plaza Hotel as the banquet chef under Chef Brian Hale. Then I was at the Scottish Arms. Then I was at, since 2012, I've owned Tenacious Eats. I've developed ice cream for Clementine's Creamery, did all their research and development. And let's see, I took over We Gap for a while, did a stint there to revamp the menu. So I've kind of had my hand in a lot of pies.
You know?
But I keep going back to the movie stuff.
Other than Tenacious, what was your favorite
posting? What did you really love doing?
I would say the Scottish Arms. The history of that building itself, it's super kind of spooky and quirky, and very comfortable in working with Allie and the crew there. And I still carry that with me.
Yeah.
You know,
my son, his first few years out of Mizzou, did food service and pretty much followed Jeff Dill around, you know, and went to all, you know, Scape and to Ruth's and then to Capital. And he's like, I had to get out because if I didn't, I would never get out. Like, he hit that point when he was about 27. He's like, if I don't get out now, I'm going to be 3 a.m. every night, because it's such a lifestyle.
It is. You're right. It's not a career choice. It's a lifestyle choice. Most of your friends are cooks. Most of your friends are chefs or mixologists and people in industry, because we don't have normal days off like everyone else. Our days off are maybe a Monday, maybe a Tuesday too, if you're lucky. Get your laundry done, try and interact with family and
humans.
Friends. Yeah, humans. Pretend like you're human for a small amount of time. But it truly is so different, because I hear so many people say when they watch the Food Network or they watch cooking shows, they're like, oh, I could do that. I would love to be a chef. I love cooking. My reaction to that is, you know, it's so cool that you love cooking, but that's not enough. That's just not enough. It's an addiction. It's saying, hey, I want to jump on this pirate ship and I want to hang out with the Dread Pirate Roberts for this many years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was right. If he didn't get off the train then,
yeah,
he would still be on the train.
I think all the creative arts are like that. Like, mm-hmm. I have been drawn to it my whole life, but my brother ruined it for me. He was 11 years older than me, and he was like a pot-smoking musician, and my dad was World War II, Hard Hat Joe, and they just clashed. So when I came out like a giraffe, and I was doing all my shenanigans, they just really tamped it down. And I ended up at law school. And I did 10 years as a lawyer, and I was miserable. I was bad. I was just my final job, where they're about to fire me before I quit. And they're like, we're going to level with you, because they had a newspaper called Dicta. There's like 50 lawyers, which is a legal term. And I had an underground newspaper like The Onion called Big Dicta. And they loved it so much that they didn't fire me. For 3 years, they're like, you did very little legal work, but we're so entertained by you that we just kept you around. And here I am 24 years later, right?
Oh, that's brilliant.
Isn't that
I love
crazy?
That story.
Niels, bite the head off one of those things.
What things?
The voodoo guy.
Oh,
are you going to stab
that's after,
one?
No, I got to eat the other ones first, though. Desserts after, unless
you're
you need
so
it
weird.
For a photo op. What
you're,
desserts
you're,
after the
you're
other
such
stuff?
Such a child in every
I gotta
other way.
I got to eat this chicken, and then I got to have another egg, and then I'm going to have the dessert
God.
Guy.
I'm so done with you.
I love that dessert guy.
I mean, I'll
guy.
Do that. I guess I'll bite the head off.
They're the undead dessert guys. Does that make it better?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go.
Let's go.
That's so good.
See how happy dessert in the middle of eating can be?
I got to save the rest for after, but that is so good.
So this is the Gremlins event. It's November 15th and 16th at Work and Leisure off of Locust. The 16th is sold out, but the 15th has about 40 tickets left. Go to brownpapertickets.com. Gobble up, no pun, those tickets, because it's going to be a lot of fun. The food's amazing. Liz, always good to see you, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I
always have so much fun with you guys.
Of course. All right. I ran into people who wouldn't let me come back to the studio, so I have nothing for this segment.
Let's just sit here and let music play.
Good idea.
And then
I'll tell people
anyway.
They should dance. Hey, let's dance.
Then you can be our hype man, Rach, and go like, hey, everybody, let's support Dave. Here comes the music that we're going to dance to.
I didn't watch a lot of that, but I did feel bad for her. That's a pretty tough position
Listen,
to be in.
She chose to be there.
Sometimes you still feel bad.
And you know
people.
What? This is one of the things that really is sad about the whole thing to me, too, is does nobody have the nerve to go up to him and say,
maybe not.
Maybe we should wrap this up.
Do you see this story? I thought it was actually pretty cool. At first, I was mad about it because on Drudge, it said archaeologists find the Holy Grail. And I'm like, no, they didn't. But okay. And in the Indiana Jones, they are at the famous Petra. and they have the whole thing about choose wisely, which one's the grail, bejeweled ones.
Which is the cup of the carpenter.
Exactly. Yeah. And they were at Petra, and they found a cup that looks almost identical to the one from the movie.
Oh, so they found Indiana Jones.
Right.
Holy grail.
Yeah, and maybe not Jesus's, but they found a movie prop.
You know who that was? That was our boy Josh, Josh Gates.
Yeah, I thought they showed a picture of him, so I thought that might be him. Yeah.
Oh, that was the new TV show,
Expedition Unknown. It's
yeah, his new season. He said we had a great discovery on the commercial that I saw.
That show drives me crazy, though.
I know.
Yeah. Right.
I've seen every episode.
I've seen a lot of them
too. It's just so formulaic that before every single commercial, they're like, oh my God, what's that? And then you know it's nothing. You know good and GD well that it's going to be a Pepsi bottle cap.
They come back and they're like, oh, it was dirt.
I know.
So they finally found something.
Yeah.
Good for Josh. We need to get him on the show.
I've been working that angle.
Is he too good for us?
I'm a huge fan. No, he's just busy. He's got a lot going on.
They're never too busy for the DDS.
He's busy saying, what's that? Like,
what's that?
Yeah.
It's the best thing about the ghost shows too, right? Did you hear that?
Because these guys, you gotta snag them when they're in the off season, but he doesn't really have one because he's got like three projects that pretty much go 24/7.
Speaking of ghost shows, for the Halloween show this year, for the week, what we're planning on doing is Monday through Wednesday, we're going to play you best of versions of some of the shows that we've done in the past. Then on Halloween proper, we're going to feature some listeners and some dramatic readings, and it's going to be a lot of good, spooky, getting ready to take the kids out trick-or-treating fun. Andrew, if anyone out there has a good, true ghost story, how do they get it to you?
DGSHalloween@gmail.com. Please send them over, and we'll schedule a time for you to come on down and record something with us, and we'll get that edited up nice and slick and then be ready for Halloween.
Rach, what was your scariest moment during a DGS show?
Good question. Probably, I mean, it kind of varies depending on the moment you ask me. The one that's popping into my head now is when we went to Mineral Springs Mall in Alton, and we had the lovely listener down in the swimming pool, the drained swimming pool.
Yes.
And she started freaking out.
Let's replay that one.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a really good
one. We're like, well, we'll go get her. And the door locked behind her.
Bolted
shut. And that was insane.
Here's the thing. I've said this for 10 years now, whatever it was since we did that show. I did not bolt that door, nor did anyone else, because I'm in charge. No one's going to do it without me telling them to.
It's like a liability.
It's a liability. If that something caught on fire or the poor woman had a seizure and we couldn't get the deadbolt open. So that door was just barely like maybe an inch open. And then when we came back to get her, because she freaked out because she heard someone walking around the pool perimeter. Mm-hmm. And on that recording, you can hear what sounds like someone walking in boots. Mm-hmm. And on Phoebe's life, we had no one in there. There was no Confederate. There's no one walking around. No one clippy clopping the boot sound. And then when we got to the door, it was dead bolted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all on video. It's crazy.
I'm kind of a scaredy cat in general in my life. Like I don't, you know, I wouldn't be the first person to go into like a haunted house or whatever. I never stop being shocked that I lived at Mineral Springs for a year.
Kind of weird.
It's like, I would go, because I'd get home from, like, here at, like, midnight, and I'd just, like, walk through the hallway with all the lights off at midnight, and I'm just, like, trudging to my stupid little apartment or whatever, and it's like...
Did it bother you?
Yeah, if I couldn't think about it. I had to, like, dissociate.